It's the True Faith podcast on this beautiful day when Newcastle United have obliterated Arsenal. That's what it feels like in the second half. Newcastle United 2, Arsenal 1, and the sun is shining outside on a fantastic... Well, actually, we're in Seton Delville and there was fog. But in Newcastle, the sun was shining on this most perfect of days. I'm Alex Hurst. I've got Michael Carlin, Charlotte Robson, Adam Widdrington and Norman Riley on the line because so many of us wanted to talk about this majestic day. Newcastle United have made it 4 in a row, 41 points on the board. I believe we've moved above Everton in the table, and if we haven't, we will soon. We don't care because Newcastle United are absolutely fantastic. Mickey, why don't you start us off telling us a little bit about how magical that was today at St James's Park?
It was just an absolute delight again at home, which how often have I been able to say that recently? Having mint games and mint results at home. Just makes you remember what we're doing at the minute. Makes you remember why we're Toon fans, like, and why we do it. It was just so good. A bit of background on my day. I arrived late. I had to park the car like absolutely miles away from the ground, and I was late, so I ran all the way from past Exe Park. So I got to St James's like pouring with sweat, knackered. Ran into the toilet to grab some tissue to wipe my sweaty head, and then ran to the top of the steps and saw Arsenal score like straight away.
That's so late, Mickey. There's late, and then there's basically turning up for the second half.
I couldn't get parked. I was incredibly late, and then to see that, I was just like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, what a terrible start. But you could see after that, we were quite sure in the next 5 minutes, you could see it wasn't gonna be a real problem. We weren't going to go away and get beat comfortably by Arsenal after that. And then obviously roll into the second half, we equalise. And from the moment of the equaliser, the atmosphere was absolutely class. And there was a couple of times where you could see even the people in the night, the Leezers, were joining in the songs. Which never really happens. You've got some of the people in the stand like clapping along as they do.
Hello.
Out of time. But
no.
But yeah, like, again, another thing. How often do you see the whole ground singing? And how often do you see the whole ground singing at the same time? Like singing the same song at the same time. It never happens at St James's. And I think that's probably because of the singing section. So the fact that there's a singing section and the corner like that are loud with the same song helps it carry around the ground. I think that was noticeable today.
Well, not only has Rafa got the team working as a unit, Mickey, but he's got the whole crowd working together as well.
He has. And today is just, it's just amplified my feelings about Rafa. Like, he's just a magician. To be achieving what he has with this squad is absolutely remarkable and should go down right at the top of his footballing CV. Like, the way we played today, particularly in the second half, was just a delight to watch. We were just better than Arsenal. And I've just enjoyed the day immensely from start to finish.
I think we all have, and that's very well said. I want to bring in Charlotte now. Charlotte, I don't want to embarrass you too much, but since you came onto the podcast scene, Newcastle have been fucking great. You have to talk in the microphone. Newcastle have been absolutely fucking class. Like, how good is it since you kind of... I mean, I don't know how many games you went to before you reintroduced yourself into our lives, but, like, how does today rank in terms of, like, the games that you've been to recently?
Oh, my God, it was so good. It was mint. You can hear in my voice. I had a normal voice before I went to the football today. Yeah, it was just class. Like, the atmosphere was so good. I think everybody feel... Like, there's obviously a feeling of, like, we're a bit... Well, we're obviously safe, and... You know, everyone, there was just a lightness, a much lighter feel across the St. James's Park. And yeah, it was just absolutely class. Sun shining, everyone's in a good mood. And like Mickey said, like, the whole stadium was singing songs, and it was just class. Like, I was in the East Stand, so I resent the accusation that we were clapping along, because it was like a lot, like... Even some standing, no less. Like, it was amazing. It was just an absolutely class atmosphere. And I think, like Ricky said, like, once the first goal went in for Arsenal, it definitely didn't dampen any spirits, where I think, you know, half a season ago, people would have been like, well, that's that then. Like, we're fucked. But it was just, like, back on it, back on your feet and singing and completely behind the team. So, it was class.
Very good description, very well put. Norman, you watched the game on television. You weren't able to make it up. And how was it for you today? I know you've had a few drinks in celebration.
Well, I'll tell you what, Alex. What's happened this season with Newcastle United? So I took a year out from me, you know, I mean, I would say career, but it wasn't a career. I just worked in a shit admin job to do a Masters. And basically, Newcastle United and Rafa Benitez this season have made me regret doing a Masters. Because what's happened is I got ill. I went to the Leicester match. I was so far behind with my Masters work that I've had to miss today's match. And it's another match that I've missed because of a stupid fucking Masters that's not going to do anything for us. I detest the fact that I've done it. That's how gutted I am that I wasn't there today. But watching it on TV, of course, I picked up on the atmosphere. The atmosphere was excellent. It was noisy more or less from the off. And like you've all alluded to, even when they went one up, I mean, obviously not being in the stadium, you don't see exactly what's happening on the pitch. You only see the kind of angle of the camera. And to me, it had the sort of sense for the first 30 minutes of an end of season game with two teams that had nothing to play for. And when Arsenal went one up, there was never the feeling that we were going to lose, but it was kind of just like a really slow and pretty dull game to watch. And I thought, as long as Rafa gets him in at half time and gives him a bit of a rollicking, because the players were lethargic, there was a lack of concentration, there was a lack of application. But then as soon as Perez equalised, for me, regardless of the stats that year, if you read a match report in the BBC and you look at the stats, regardless of those, which would show an overwhelming dominance by Arsenal, we were the dominant ones, and we were the only ones that were going to go on and win that game. And we did, and we absolutely deserved it. And it was just a brilliant performance. And again, we've, on this podcast, especially harped on about how good Rafa Benitez is all season. And obviously, Alex, you and I, our love for Rafa is so strong that we end up like just messaging each other personally to express our love, because, fear of putting out in a public forum because of the judgment that it would receive. But it was just brilliant. It was just another testament to how incredible that manager is, and how lucky we are to have him, and how Mike Ashley needs to have an epiphany this pre-season and say, right, if I give this bloke 100 million, he's probably going to make me so much money, more money than I can ever imagine, because with 100 million quid, which is nothing in today's market, Benitez would have us challenging for the Champions League, and I don't doubt that. And that's not an exaggeration. It's not beer-fueled hyperbole. It is a genuine, genuine fucking thought. With 100 million quid in pre-season, Benitez would have us challenging for the Champions League.
Well said, Norman. Adam, before the game, there seemed to be a very relaxed mood across the city compared to previous home games. Well, the whole of this season, and even last season when obviously points were required to go up, I mean, that's probably the most relaxed I've seen St James's and happy pre-game for many years. Did you get that feeling both before the game and during the game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the bright sunshine helped, and I echo Norman's sentiment about it feeling like it's kind of last day of the season, kind of everyone's in a good mood, everyone's happy. I think ultimately what has gone before, the fact that we got, a largely unexpected win at Leicester, although it was fully deserved, we got the big wins against Huddersfield and Southampton. We did the hard work, which meant that coming into this game today, we were able to not really... We weren't so stressed. We could loosen up a bit, and the pressure was off, and we could, and the crowd could enjoy it. The players could enjoy it. I mean, Rafa this week again has been reiterating 40 points, 40 points, 40 points. But at 38 points, I think most of us would be in agreement that that's job done, and 10 points clear the relegation zone before this game. That was us pretty comfortably secure and safe in the Premier League, ready for next season. We can start thinking about summer. But yeah, so I think we've earned the right today to have been, I guess, quite relaxed, and just to soak up the atmosphere and just enjoy a home game at St James's Park again, whatever the result might have been.
Yeah, and that word enjoy is definitely something I'm sure everyone listening to this can take away from, A, how you feel listening, B, all of us here in this room. It was just another thoroughly enjoyable game, and it was a different type of enjoyment to Huddersfield. Was sheer relief. Southampton was kind of disbelief in that it was so comfortable, so easy for United to be so far ahead in such a crucial game. And today was just like, these lads came and they've rested one or two players. Ozil hasn't played, Koscielny hasn't played, but they've still got the £110 million strike force. Danny Welbeck's on the pitch, Iwobi's on the pitch. They've still got their array of superstars. And in the second half, United were just the better team by an absolute mile. We're going to come on to that in a little bit, Adam. There was someone's tweeted us, and I'm sorry that I can't remember who, I've had too many drinks. there was once upon a time where, particularly at home, going behind in recent histories, Newcastle United meant a 3 or 4 goal defeat. How refreshing was it today to not see that? And also, what, like, compared to how we used to be then, regardless of players have changed, what changed in our response? What did you see in terms of going behind that was very positive from United?
Well, this is it. It's the Benitez mentality. It's the belief that we can. We talked about the crowd earlier, but the minute we went down to what was quite a good goal, it was a very good goal, well taken, although semi-root one, scoff. But there was chanting for Newcastle as soon as we went down 1-0. And it sounds easy to say this after the event, but I don't think I was alone in thinking, yes, we're 1-0 down, but I don't think that means we're still very much in this game. Not a lot actually happened by either side before that goal. It was all very kind of in the middle third, I guess. But what we've seen over the last 2 months from our team, ultimately since the turn of the year, is it's belief, there's fight, but there's structure, stability, solidity. People are, you know, we've got our loan players fighting for permanent contracts, and they're seeing the best of Newcastle. And I was under no doubt that, yes, we went down to a very good goal, but we had so much more to give. And, you know, looking at the stats, you know, like, for example, at half time, we'd had about 29% possession, which isn't uncommon for Newcastle to not have the lion's share possession at home. Obviously, that is quite a big disparity in having the ball. But, you know, we'd managed as many shots on target as Arsenal by half time, 3. And they'd had so much more possession, they'd had so much more shots than we had, but it was 1-1. So it's this Rafa Benitez efficiency, and that's a key theme under his stewardship, that we might not have a lot of the ball, but hell, we make the most of when we do have the ball, and we can have impact on games without having to hold the ball and dictate it. As Norman alluded to before, we did dominate, but in a different way. We sort of dominated without the ball in a way, just because we were so efficient when we had it.
Yeah, I thought first half that we were poor, and it's a positive, I don't want to be negative, but the fact that we were poor, and I'm going to why, yet we still managed to come out of the game at half-time with a deserved 1-1 scoreline was really positive. And I remember, those of you who've been listening to the podcast since we've been doing it, which we're in our fourth season now, Mickey, if you remember, you know, back under Carver and McLaren, we would literally have to play out of our skin to get a result. Like, all of the planets would have to align. Like, there would have to be, you'd have to have a good ref, you'd have to have Colaccini on a good day, you'd have to have Cisse on a good day. And, like, to go, I was saying to the lads on the Matchday podcast, if you don't subscribe to us on Patreon, please do. 2 to 4 extra shows per week for £1.25 a week, including the Matchday podcast, which is very popular, which is basically we record ourselves during the game, also before and after. You get a lot of crowd noise in there. Si and Ben on the Matchday kind of had a little chat and was saying, oh, we've been good here, we've come back into the game, we've been well on top. And I said, no, I think we've been poor here. And me and Norman both agreed, I'll come to Norman in a second, that Rafa will have given them a rocket at half time because Arsenal had a lot of time and space in and around our box. I thought Arsenal should have scored more in the first half than they did. They were guilty of some bad misses. And I just felt it wasn't very us. I felt we weren't compact enough. I felt we were too rigid in defence. Arsenal's movement caused a lot of problems. I thought Diarmé and Shelvey were too deep. And although we created Arsenal a few problems, which we did, and we'll come on to the goal in a second, I just felt in the first half that Arsenal were the better side. And I think to turn that around as they did in the second half, and we'll come on to that, is another massive coup and bonus for this team. And let's go all the way back to last season, right? Newcastle United, when conceding the first goal under Rafa Benitez, have genuinely been terrible. And, like, we haven't really talked about it this season that much because we don't go behind very often. And, you know, there's Brighton away, and there is, I'm trying to think, West Ham away this season. So there are notable exceptions, but this was a bog-standard game where we went behind. When we used to concede the first goal in the Championship, particularly at home, we would end up losing the game, not even coming back to get a draw. Swansea at home, we came back to get a draw and Hossler equalised, so that was really positive. But Norman, just your thoughts, please, on the first half performance, because I think me and you were very similar in our appraisals of that.
We were, and I don't think you mentioned that you thought Arsenal were on top there, so I slightly differ from that. Arsenal were in, like, they were on top from Lacazette's goal until more or less we equaliser a few minutes before that. They were on top in the sense that we weren't offering them any kind of challenge. I don't think they were playing particularly well. And the goal itself, as Adam said, it was a very good goal. Brilliant ball over the top from Mustafi, but at the same time, it goes back to the kind of that cliche, all the players are on the beach kind of attitude. Lejeune was so guilty of ball watching. Now, if that ball comes over the top 2 weeks ago and Lejeune's on his game because every single player is absolutely focused from minute one of the game, I don't think that goal would have happened. I think Lejeune would have had it. He would have had the ball, or he would have been on top of Lacazette, and he was just a little bit guilty of ball watching, and that's what led to it. Oh, yeah, great ball, good finish, all that, but at the same time, it was a goal that I think 2 weeks ago would have been avoided. And I think we were messaging each other, and you could see Rafa on the sideline, especially watching it on TV, obviously, because the camera pans out to him. He was absolutely livid. He was livid at the kind of lack of application, the lack of urgency from the players. I'll name names here. I mean, you had Lejeune looked off the pace. Yedlin was positionally all over the place. And you know what? Credit to Arsenal for that, I suppose. The way that they kind of switched positions with a sort of front three or front four, that did throw us a little bit. And you mentioned during the game that way, for the sort of past couple of months, we've had like a very rigid, solid back four. And I think we struggled with Arsenal's movement initially. But again, it was one of those where you thought, right, Rafa clearly wants someone out of this game, and he's gonna really deliver a message at half time, and the players are gonna come out, you know, and with a completely different mindset. And the Perez goal, it was almost like the Perez goal kind of it negated the fact that Rafa needed to give them a ball again at half time, because as soon as we scored, the attitude changed. The attitude completely changed, and we came out in the second half, and for the first 10 minutes. Arsenal had a lot of the ball. I mean, they had the majority of the ball for the whole game, but they had a lot of the ball, and you just thought, yeah, but let them have the ball, let them have the 10 minutes, get Slimani on, and we'll go on and win this. And that's exactly what happened. We brought Slimani on, and we were comfortable. We were comfortable on 29% of the possession. So apart from a sort of bad 30 minutes in the first half, we did get back to what we're good at, and what we're good at is pressuring teams, grafting, getting in their faces, and just being incredibly effective when we got the ball. And it turned out beautifully.
Yeah, well said. Charlotte, I'm going to come to you. What was your appraisal at halftime? Obviously, we got the goal back. Did you think we were lucky to be back in the game, or are you kind of more on Norman's wavelength in that Arsenal didn't particularly do that much to warrant a lead?
I don't think that we were like out of the game after the first goal. I think, you know, like we've said, the team sort of rallied and came back, and I thought we were very strong. I did think Arsenal looked good. I thought they looked better than us in the first half. I didn't sort of think about it in terms of Rafa giving them a bollocking at half-time. I think particularly sort of to Norman's point just there, because after the first goal, which was our first goal, which was, what, 28 minutes? When was that? 28 minutes?
38 minutes.
38. 38, was it? All right. After that, it just felt like the mood lifted, and it felt like, yeah, like actually we're here and we're going to be okay.
29 minutes it was.
All right. I was more right. Not right, but more right.
What minute was it? What minute was the goal?
29.
Bloody hell. I must have been. God. I must have been half pissed by like the
27
minute match.
Anyway, yeah. So I thought they looked better. I think they've got a lot more sort of an attacky style of play than us. Like, there's far more players on our players straight away, going straight in where we would hang back slightly, which is just, I guess, their style of play, which is fine. But it looks a little bit more aggressive, and it looks a little bit more engaged, I guess, with it. So, yeah, after half time, seeing us come back and I think, you know, come back with a lot more attack and a lot more, I don't know why I want to say oomph, but I'm going to, a lot more oomph. Yeah, that's me, I think.
I had quite an odd perspective on the game at the start, because as I said before, I didn't arrive until Arsenal scored. So I hadn't witnessed any sort of Arsenal dominance at all And they certainly didn't dominate after the score. Quite the opposite, really. I think Newcastle took a bit of a hold on the game, and we looked like not necessarily the better side, but certainly not a worse side. And that's not, as Alex has alluded to before, it's not something that's common for Newcastle when we fall behind. We normally fall behind, then look worse than we did before the scored. So that was quite refreshing. And it was weird. It was weird for me to come in at one down and think immediately from there, as soon as I got in my seat, I said to my dad, we're going to win. And then 5 minutes later, I said, we're better than these, Dad. We're going to win.
I think one of the big differences that I noticed when we went 1-0 down was that Dwight, and I sent you a picture, didn't I, Norman, during the first half, that Dwight Gayle basically was just told, right, you are on the halfway line. Compared to previously when he'd been coming back for corners, when he'd been dropping a little bit deeper, when the play went deeper, when that first goal went in for Arsenal, he was basically kept to keep to it. And that's a big difference in what we've seen from Rafa, because that was an admission, right, we need to get back into this game, and the only way we're going to do it is attacking. Norman, if I can sing my own praises here, I'm looking at a message that I sent you at 13:41 saying, early call, we need Slimani on, these lads can't deal with the high ball. And what did we see? We saw Dwight Gayle as the half went on and on with him playing that higher line. Every time the ball was going after over an Arsenal centre-back's head, they didn't want to head the ball, they didn't want to play it back to check. I don't know what they were doing, but it was kind of like Dwight got in so many times behind. A, you knew Slimani was going to get in even more behind, but B, it was almost like, Dwight, have a shot. Like, if you get in behind five times and you have a skewed shot, one of them might go in, but the lack of confidence that he has playing at St James's, it was a real shame to see him, you know, fail to do that. However, having said that, first goal comes from basically that move over the top for Dwight. He moves it out to the right-hand side and then we score from it. But in addition to that, there was a lot of stuff from Dwight which I thought was really poor. And I love singing his praises and I love him to bits. He'll always be one of my favourite players for Newcastle. But there was times when he was one-on-one with an Arsenal centre-back or one-on-one with a full-back and he didn't even try to take them on. I think towards the end of the first half, he did try to take a player on. He lost the ball and that's all right. I can live with that because you want your centre-forward, particularly in the final third of the pitch, testing their defensive players, making them move back towards their own goal, making them make decisions they don't want to make. And I think we're going to come on to Slimani in a minute, but I think Slimani's performance has definitely put him in the picture for a start at Everton moving forwards. Adam, I'll come to you first on Ayoze Perez. Another goal, our top scorer for the season. And you think, just before we started recording, you think you noticed something, that an Arsenal weakness for the goal, which you'd seen before.
Yeah, Mustafi, as we said, him and Holding really struggled with the high balls, but it was the goal from Perez at the near post that almost seemed to be a carbon copy of Shane Long's goal for Southampton last weekend, where Mustafi was kind of left flat-footed. I don't know whether he expected Cech to come for it or not, but it was a cross from the same position and a strike from about the same position, although the ball went in the opposite corner. But there was a definite carbon copy of that goal that we saw Perez, the way he hooked the ball in. He darted in the near post, ahead of Mustafi, who just couldn't react quick enough, and he's beat Cech at the near post. So maybe it's a culmination of the pair of them that, you know, that their confidence is a bit shot, is Cech on the wane. I have no doubt that Benitez would have studied that game intensely, and that kind of thing where he might have told Perez or Gayle, dart across, try and make a near post run when the opportunity presents itself, because we know how meticulous Rafa Benitez is. We know that he looks at these kinds of details, and I would have no doubt that he's picked that out and he's just had a little word in his forward's ear, and look where we are. Brilliant, brilliant equaliser.
Norman, I always feel like I should come to you on Perez, because you've backed him so much this season and last. He's repaying yourself and, but more importantly, the manager, tenfold. I run out of superlatives for him, and I kind of said my bit in him last week. Is there anything you feel needs said on Perez's performance today?
Well, you're right, Alex. I have backed him for the last couple of seasons, and I think he's probably sat there tonight thinking, I'm really glad that I had Norman Reilly's back in. It's helped massively. But no, on a serious note, I mean, like, if you watch any interviews with Perez, he speaks really well. He talks a good game. He's got like a really kind of calm sort of presence. And I think you see that on the pitch. I think he's obviously had a lot of grief from the stands. He has had a lot of grief, but he doesn't let it affect him. He banged in like an outrageous own goal against Leicester, and that would have like that would have just absolutely sunk a lot of players. But it didn't with Perez, and he's always come back every time. He's throughout his career at Newcastle, every time you think, like, for fuck's sake, are you as here? People have like complained about him. He's always come back and gone on a little run where he's done really well. And there are a couple of things you have to bear in mind. He cost $1.5 million from Tenerife in, like, you know, the Spanish second division. One and a half million, right? That was only a few years ago. I mean, that's nowt. He'd never played in the top flight in Spain. He was brought over to England to play in Newcastle and to be in the development squad maybe for a couple of seasons. That didn't happen. He was thrown straight in the first team, and he's kind of had to learn his trade, probably at this level before you know he was intended to. And I think the fact that he's had all this grief, but he's still been a regular fixture on the side is just testament to how well much confidence he's got in himself and how much belief Rafa's got in him. He's a vital part of the side. He's grafted. He got took off in, like, I think it was like maybe the 75th minute, somewhere around that point. And he got took off because basically he was absolutely paggard. He just runs and he runs. And he might miss place passes. And he might miss, you know, he might time his runs incorrectly. He might get caught offside. He might do something that you think, mate, what you're doing there? But you know what? He puts a ball in the net. He creates things. And an interesting thing about watching the match on TV is listening to the pundits. Now, some of the pundits you just think are total dickheads, you know, Redknapp, Souness, naming names there. But when Thierry Henry is on pre-match, Thierry Henry pre-match said, Newcastle have got a chance of beating anyone because they've got players like Perez and Kennedy on the side. That's Thierry Henry saying we've got a chance when we've got someone like Perez on the side. So if Henry's watching football and thinking, you know what, this kid's got something, then that's good enough for me. If Rafa Benitez selects him week in, week out, shows faith in him, that's good enough for me. The lad is a good footballer, and I'm really happy to see him get his rewards for the graft and persistence that he's put in over the last few seasons.
Yeah, well said. Mickey wants to come in on this one.
It's now like much more obvious and apparent why the statistics have shown that we're a better side with Perez. Like, he's now, it's more obvious his contribution, obviously because he's putting it in the net, but to the layman, it's more obvious why Perez has been picked every single game and why we've won all of our games with Perez in the team. Because
I wish, but yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. We haven't won all our games with Perez in the team, but loads of them.
You know what I mean? We've won most. That's what I meant to say, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, moving on to the second half then. Oh, Charlotte, you would like to say something? Okay, you're pointing at my microphone. Thank you for that. Moving on to the second half, a couple of things. I don't know whether any using it. This little first half, I thought we would press high. I expected that. We did it against Huddersfield. We did it against Southampton. I didn't expect us to press as much as we did, and I don't think we were as good at it as we thought we might be, and it led to problems and led to space for Arsenal that we've talked about. And I thought we were lucky in the first half not to concede more than one. We're also kind of lucky not to concede a penalty, and Kennedy might have seen red. We'll have to be honest about it. We can't get all furious when many red cards are denied against us this season. But that Kennedy was lucky, by all accounts, to stay on the pitch. He was late, and then it was a high arm, I think, from Lascelles for a shot that went over the bar. I mean, you've seen them given, you've seen them not. So we rode with luck, but second half, it was back to being the Newcastle United we've seen recently and the Newcastle United we know and love. We sat off them. We didn't press particularly high in the opening stages. It was break us down. What have you got? And when we were able to break, which we broke at pace on several occasions, it was incredibly effective. Charlotte, you want to talk about Matt Ritchie and his performance? Because again, and just to give everyone a little bit of context, we were talking on this podcast, I'm sure several people were, during the difficult autumn that we had, we were like, where's Matt Ritchie? One of our best players last season. He hasn't come to the Premier League. He hasn't scored. He doesn't have any assists. And Charlotte, how important is he now to this side?
Well, massively. Like, today, particularly, I think, is a perfect example of exactly what Matt Ritchie can do. He worked like a dog today. He was working so hard on the pitch. Like, I'm delighted that Rafa brought him off just before the final whistle so that we could get a chance to stand up and applaud for him, because I thought he played so brilliantly today. It was all over the pitch. He was on the ball and just incredible. And I think it's a real sort of return to form, almost, like you alluded to, like he in the autumn, like, we didn't see this Matt Ritchie, and he was just played so brilliantly today. I was so impressed.
Yeah, very well said. I think the difference about him is he's far more willing to take a chance. Now he's got Modiame and Shelvey with that solid base. Now he's got Kennedy on the other flank with Dummett playing so well. I think earlier on in the season when the team was a little bit more up in the air, when we weren't as strong in the middle of the pitch, if he lost the ball and they countered attack, that they literally just waltzed through the middle of the pitch and more often than not scored or had a good chance, whereas he's now got a little bit of added protection, knowing that if something he wants to try a lot, he likes playing the ball first time, he likes first time crosses, he likes trying to find someone inside or even driving into the box when he first picks it up, then you know the fact that the other players, which were going to come on, were playing so well has kind of allowed him to flourish. I thought you were putting your hand up there. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of emphasise that as well. Yeah, like that he played so well today is absolutely down to like Diame and Shelvey. Diame in particular, like we've seen this half of the season. I mean, we've said it so many times on this podcast, can't believe the player that Mo Diame's turned out to be. And yeah, that's a lot down to him and it's a lot down to Rafa. But you're right, like, Richie today, with the support behind him of this like new solid Diame sort of character behind him, I think absolutely is why we saw such a good performance.
Yeah, can I just say something about Diame? Sorry, just quickly, you mentioned Diame, I'll have to dive in, yeah, because I tell you what I noticed today about him. He misplaced a couple of passes, and there was one particular occasion where he tried to turn and lost the ball and it led to a chance for them. But that's just a couple of little things that he did wrong. One thing I noticed today was pretty much every single camera angle, no matter what we were doing, whether we were attacking or defending, Diame was in the picture. That's what it felt like. And I think I said the other week, I think I said in the match report the other day that he eats the pitch. He is just everywhere. He's just this kind, he's almost like an omnipotent presence on a football pitch. He is just everywhere. And he's man of the match award that was given by, you know, the Sky co-commentator David Proven was pretty much throughout the whole match was just waxing lyrical about him. He was absolutely brilliant, and we you see it when we watch him live, we see how much graft he puts in. But today, I mean, watching a match on TV, there are a lot of things that you don't see. But today, to see him on camera as much as he was is just testament to the amount of graft that he puts in. And I mean, I just wish he was 25 and playing like this, because we'd have a player for life here.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to point out about Richie before we go back to Diame is there's no surprise that Richie's better performances have come at the same time as Yedlin. Yedlin's now looking like he can defend, where earlier in the season he didn't at all. And that confidence that you must get as a winger, thinking my fullback can defend and can catch anyone that runs past us, gives him the opportunity to start creating the chances which he previously wasn't doing. And I think Yedlin deserves a lot of credit both in his own performances but in allowing Richie to perform to the level that he's capable of. And we as a group were very critical of Richie in the bad spell for Newcastle, and I think had kind of come out of the consensus that there was a reason that Bournemouth sold him, wasn't it? It was because he couldn't quite cut it in the Premier League. He has proven us totally wrong, totally fucking stupid, because he's looked quality for a good number of weeks now. He looks like a really, really good Premier League winger, and he's got to be one of the first names on the sheet at the minute, which is mind-boggling considering his performances through the winter.
Must be some magic fairy dust in Lascelles' right hook, maybe, from that training ground bust-up, because since then, Diame's been unbelievable. Something I noticed about Diame today, it was in the 89th minute. Arsenal got a free kick on the left-hand side, about the 88th minute. And ball came in. It was got headed out a bit. There was a bit of sort of back and forward. And there was a moment where Maitland-Niles, who had come on as a sub, was sort of running down the right wing inside the box. And Diame came across and he just put his body weight in front of Maitland-Niles and just shepherded the ball out for goal kick. Seemingly quite an innocuous sort of little episode of play, but actually, if you think of Mo Diame from 6 months ago, he would have gone in there, fouled him, and it would have been a penalty, and we would have drawn 2-2. But the Diame of 2018, this new improved, the new recipe Diame, is that you didn't worry about him making that challenge because you knew that he wouldn't do anything reckless, he wouldn't do anything stupid, because as you said, picked up maybe one piece of reckless play today that nearly led to a goal. We were lucky that they misfired, but that kind of just epitomizes this huge transition from sort of bumbling midfielder, championship midfielder, to this sort of this powerhouse in the centre of midfield that's just everywhere, as Norman says, eating up the pitch like Pac-Man.
Yeah, I didn't want to be drawn in too much to talking about Mo because I've said me piece this season many times on that footballer. But what impresses me most, and this goes back to last week at Leicester, Si, Mickey, I don't know if you remember. Oh, we weren't stood with you. during the game at Leicester, towards the end, Si went, Diame hasn't had a great game, and I disagreed, and I said the amount of times he's forced Leicester players to go backwards in promising position is insane. And it happened again today. There was a point, I think it was in the first half, when Arsenal ended up coming back to Peter Cech just because Mo Diame thought about putting a tackle in, and opposition players just don't want to go near him. They don't want to know. No one's trying to meg him. No one's doing step overs to try and take him on. They're not going to risk it because they've all been prepped. They've all seen and been told by their managers, do not try and take this man on a football pitch.
He can now tackle with his mind. Yeah.
you will lose out. You will fail to get past him, and he will dispossess you. And that's almost a given. It's not even... Obviously, he's winning a lot of 50-50, and he's still winning a ridiculous amount of tackles, which is why I'm sure he was named man of the match today. But I said against Man United, he was looking like a £30 million midfielder. I'm going to upgrade that to 50. Like, that's how good he's looking. Mick, just a quick word on his partner today, Shelvey. It wasn't kind of... I mean, actually, a few tweets have come into us saying Shelvey was magnificent. I didn't really see that myself, but Norman after, and then Mickey, you first on Shelvey today.
Well, his overall influence on the game, it can be summed up to critical passes again. We don't win that game without Shelvey, without those crucial balls over the top. Not just the ones that led to the goal, but all the rest of them as well. It pins Arsenal back, and there must have been five or six times that he's pinged 60 or 70 yard balls right over the top of their defender into a perfect position for our striker to pick the ball up and move the whole Arsenal team back. It's crucially important. First of all, it gives the defence a breather. Second of all, it moves everybody up the pitch, including our midfield. Gets Diame in the game, moves Kennedy forward, moves Richie forward. You can't say enough positives about Shelvey at the minute. And that's one of his quieter games. And he's created the goal that gets us back into the game, and he's bossed it.
It's like, you know, you might sort of, more agricultural teams might just lump the ball up to get a breather, but it's Shelvey's lumps are actually very precise, long passes, and that's the difference. And it was, like you say, Mickey, this gaining territory that he really, really helped us with today.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The difference is he puts it in a position where it's not just going to get sent straight back to our end of the pitch, which buys you time and buys you territory. And you can't underestimate the importance of that role in the team. And that's the difference between us and the other teams. The teams in the bottom 10 is we have someone with the quality of Jonjo Shelvey, and they don't. There's nobody that matches him in the league lower than us.
Norman?
Aye, and Mickey's 100% right there. I'm sorry, I'm just distracted slightly by the fact that West Brom are just about to beat Man U. We're 1-0. Oh, if you've got it on.
Shut up.
No, there's 30 seconds left of the 4 minutes of injury time, and West Brom are 1-0 against Man U.
Wow. Wonder how Guardiola's faring on his game of golf.
But in terms of Shelvey, again, it's interesting that you lads, you were impressed with Mickey. Alex, you suggested there that you maybe weren't as impressed with him as perhaps I was. And again, it's how you see the game on camera compared to when you're in the stadium, and you've got to get a totally different take on it. Now, every time Shelvey was on TV, offensively and defensively, he was absolutely brilliant. He put tackles in, tackles that were disciplined. There was aggression in there, but it was a kind of controlled, accurate aggression, which has been one of his issues in the past, that he's just been a little bit raj. He didn't show any kind of signs of that today. Those Hollywood passes, and I think we can stop calling them Hollywood passes, because, you know, it's not like he's taking one, he's not taking 10 passes and getting one of them right at the minute. What he's doing is he's putting five or six long crossfield passes in, and every single one of them's on the fucking money. Every single one of them is bang on. And at the minute, to me, it doesn't look like he's doing anything wrong. And he's doing everything right. And as Mickey said, there isn't anyone below us with a player of Shelvey's ability. There aren't any English centre midfielders out there at the minute with Shelvey's ability. There aren't. It's as simple as that. And you know, I don't want to veer into a conversation about the England, the English national team, but I will say that if Southgate doesn't take Shelby to the World Cup in the summer, then he's an absolute idiot. It's as simple as that.
It's funny about Shelby this week because he had an interview in one of the papers. I forget which one. Like I say, he had an interview this week in one of the papers. He really put himself in the spotlight. He says his disciplinary troubles are behind him. He wants to fight for a place in a World Cup. So, you know, he's on a televised game. And, you know, the Shelby previously, when a Shelby without confidence... And without integrity, doesn't kind of want to shy away, but he put himself in the spotlight. And as you said, these aggressive tackles that he put in, they were disciplined. They were the right intensity. They were fair. And I guess it's this culture of the team that if you're not seen to be putting that determination in and committed to challenges, that you know you will stick out very, very quickly, because the team only works in the way it does because everyone pulls together and everyone plays with that same attitude and fighting spirit. And, you know, that's Rafa again. But Shelvey was really impressive today because the main weakness was those high balls, as we've mentioned, and Shelvey was at the core of that.
Yeah. Charlotte, do you have any words for us on Jamal Lascelles? Who? No? None? There are no words. I was going to say, Lascelles today, I mean, Norman alluded to, he thought Lejeune had a difficult day. Would you say the same about Lascelles, or do you think he had one of his more characteristic dominating games at the back alongside Paul?
Well, just quickly on Paul Dummett, I thought he was excellent today. More typical for him, I think. I think everybody stood out today, and everyone stood out. Everyone played excellently. I think it was more sort of for Lascelles. It was more that he was like doing the hard work and not get like. I don't think he's got much praise for today from a lot of people. Just sort of putting in the graft on the back and then just sort of letting everybody else ride the wave. I thought he played excellently well. I thought he and Dummy are just brilliant together. So that's pretty much all I want to say. Like, there's not a lot from me.
There was one point again today where Arsenal had a bit of a stretch of the play and had moved Newcastle's players around a bit and looked a bit threatening. We came out of it fine, but you could see immediately afterwards Lascelles bollocking three or four different players separately, which I thought was class, and it's great to see, and it's something we've picked out before that hasn't happened at Newcastle for ages. Like, he's telling someone what they need to do to stop that happening again, and it's so useful on the pitch to have someone like that's telling you what you've done wrong and what you need to do next time, because it reminds you, and you, the next time something similar happens, you think about it. So even just for that one moment, Lascelles had a good game.
Adam, the back five seemed to work much, much better as a unit in the second half. I mean, I can't recall Arsenal actually getting behind us at all in the second half. I might be wrong. Obviously, we're recording straight after the game here, so we've not seen highlights. But what do you think the change was? Or do you think that was more Arsenal's weaknesses being exposed compared to us doing anything different?
I think it was probably a mixture of a Rafa rocket at half-time. Maybe Lascelles would have been particularly vocal. We know Dubravka can be vocal as well, which has been one of the main strengths of him coming into the side. But I think it was maybe just a bit of a reality check and a kind of reminder of, well, let's look back at why we've won the last few games at home and why we've been so solid at the back. And actually, just remember what we are capable of as a unit. And I don't think it was anything more complex than that, because, you know, when you just repeating what you've done the last sort of few home games again and showing how much we didn't do that in the first half, I think that's enough for people. You know, we're well drilled now, and I think it's just Rafa Benitez, you know, assertively reminding the team of what they should be doing.
Norman, I've kept you waiting long enough. Talk to us about Islam Slimani.
I'm gonna launch into like a massive appraisal of Slimani. Yeah, but first of all, just to get this out of the way, Hossolu, all of his criticisms. When he comes on with about 10 minutes to go, just as like a big unit to win free kicks up front, it's brilliant, and he was exactly that today. I just want to throw that out there. You mightn't be like a player who's going to start for you regularly in the Premier League, but if you're winning with 10 minutes left, he's been so good to bring on. So there you go, and a bit of praise for Hoss. But in terms of Slimani, I mean, we we've all said this more or less since the moment that we signed him. This is a lad who has got pedigree. He's got an excellent scoring record for the top team in Portugal. He scored goals in the Champions League. He was a fantastic player at Algeria in the 2014 World Cup. And it just didn't work out for him at Leicester for one reason or the other. And I think when we signed him, we all felt that he was kind of the centre forward that we wanted to see. Big, hard, brilliant in the air. And he got unlucky. He got unlucky with the injury that he had when he first arrived. But the two appearances that he's made for us at St. James's Park, he's been massively impactful in both games. The game against Huddersfield, where he kind of came on when the game was petering out slightly, and he threw the Huddersfield backline into complete disarray. And he also had the intelligence to stand behind the goal line rather than come back on the pitch and be caught offside for Perez's goal. And then today, me and you were more or less, as you said before, we were more or less texting each other from the sort of 10th minute onwards, saying, get Slimani on, because the Arsenal defenders won't know how to handle him. And that's exactly what happened. He came on at the perfect time. And that header that he knocked down for the second goal, I mean, basically, that like his neck muscles must be up there with a rhinoceros. Like a rhinoceros has got a fat, muscular neck, right? Slimani's seen that there. I'm telling you now, a rhino couldn't have done that with a 10-bob floater. It was outrageous. And he was just brilliant. He held up the plate. And a couple of other things that surprised me as well. His burst of pace over sort of 10 yards is really, really quick. And that's something I wasn't expecting, because he is a unit. He's a muscular 6-foot-plus bloke, but he broke with pace on a couple of occasions, and Arsenal couldn't handle him. And he's one of those players that you think, like, yeah, he's probably not going to be here for long enough for us to go out and buy him permanently. But I think Leicester would sell him for about 15 million, and you're thinking, well, you know what? 15 million for him in pre-season, he'd be a good signing. And again, he's just one of those players, like Pravka, like Kennedy, you can see why Benitez has said, aye, these are the players I want on my side. And he was massively effective, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him in the last 5 games of the season. I'm really looking forward to seeing him. I'd like to see him start against Everton, because Gale was excellent today in many ways. He worked his arse off like he normally does, but his confidence is shot to pieces. And I don't think Slimani suffers from confidence crises at all. I think Slimani's a kind of player who could miss 3 or 4 chances and it wouldn't get to him, whereas Gale, it does. So I would like to see Slimani on against Everton, and I'd like to see Slimani up against someone like Ashley Williams, because I think he'd absolutely fucking destroy him.
Something I noticed about Slimani, and you might not have picked this up watching it on the TV if you did, was the fact that he was very vocal from the front line, and he was ordering people about, particularly Kennedy. When Kennedy was, I mean, basically Kennedy was sort of angling for a substitution from about the 70th minute, and Rafa basically trolled him by substituting everybody else around him, and he was just like, I'm going to bloody get 90 minutes out of you. But Slimani was keeping Kennedy in check, and he was, you know, Slimani's, you know, something that our team doesn't have is a lot of experience, which Slimani does bring to the table, and it was great to see him. You know, he's barely played minutes for us, but, you know, the fact that he was barking orders and he was almost doing a Lascelles job, but from the front line, and that was fantastic to see. And what I saw from Slimani today, you know, I got to see what kind of player he was a bit more. I got to see about 20, 25 minutes of him, whatever. But I saw a player determined to fight and win a permanent contract here under Rafa Benitez. I saw somebody who absolutely wanted to play for us and wants to be part of this long term. And I was really, really impressed with what I saw.
We're just about coming to the end of the show now. I'm going to leave the final words with Mickey and then Charlotte. Mickey, 4 wins in a row for Newcastle United. We're going to start breaking records soon, as we did last year in the Championship. And let's kind of take it back to that Man United home game and the dropping into the bottom three before that. And like, Rafa Benitez has brought this club on so much in such a short amount of time, and there's going to be so much written and spoken by us, no doubt, and everyone else listening and the media about how he's turned this football club around. But tell us where you're at for these lads right now in this run that we are on.
It's just spectacular. I couldn't have more love for this team and this manager. I think the plaudits need to be shared, but people outside of this city and that aren't watching Newcastle week in, week out, won't realise the magnitude of the job that Rafa Benitez has done and what he's turned into what we have now is nothing short of remarkable, and he deserves every single award going. He really does. It's just a spectacular time to be supporting Newcastle. And what Adam just said there about Slimani fighting for the long-term contract, I think everyone's got to be thinking that, and everyone's got to be thinking long-term with Newcastle, maybe apart from one fat controller at the top. But everyone's so positive, from fans to players to manager to staff, all of them realise what we've got here, and it really does feel like we're on the cusp of something really special. And for the first time in really my adult Newcastle supporting life, I am now starting to think a bit long-term and think, fucking hell, if we can keep this manager here and keep this core of players, who knows where it could end up? And that's all it's taken for that. Well, obviously, all the work behind the scenes. But four wins in a row, and all of a sudden, the entire fan base is thinking, fuck me.
That's not pretty fucking good.
Yeah, and I just want to kind of contrast that a little bit with some fan insecurity. And I put a tweet out this morning showing Arsenal's away record, and I was immediately inundated with people saying, "You've jinxed it. Wait until they say this tweet." And you were the same yesterday, Charlotte. You sent me a message when Southampton took the lead against Chelsea, even though we were 10 points clear of the relegation zone, with no way we were going down. Like, have even you now been convinced that this is, like, I'm not saying you thought we were a bad team, but you were being the very stereotypical Newcastle United fan yesterday, still being like, no, but it's the same today. Like, people are still like, oh, you know, like, it can all go wrong. You know, we're going to get what come up, and it can't last. Can it last? Are you being
well,
one round?
I have, I'm an anxious Annie, but actually, yes, I think it can last. I think the form we've shown in the last few matches is just so good. And you know, it is this team that we really are behind. Like, it's such a team, and we talked about it a bit on the preview podcast, available for patrons. We talked a little bit about it then, like that one of the advantages we have over Arsenal is the fact that they seem like not a sort of team-minded as we are. And yeah, that comes down from Rafa and the sort of work that he's put into us. But I really think that this is a squad that cares so much and puts everything into it every game. And now I'm starting to believe that actually we've got the skill behind us now, as well as the mindset that, yeah, I think a guy behind me after our second goal was like, fucking hell, we might end up in Europe now. And I was like, actually, maybe we will. So that's where I'm looking.
Maybe next season.
Wait, Alex.
Norman.
I've got to get this off my chest. I've got to see it. Right? So we all love Rafa. We all know what an incredible job he's done. It is spectacular what he's done with this, you know, this squad of players, right? But are we not at the stage now where, right, and correct me if I'm wrong, yeah, but since we beat West Ham on the 23rd of December, have we only lost to Man City and Liverpool
That
game?
That's right.
Is that right?
Yes.
So three defeats since the 23rd of December, right?
In the cup, two defeats in the league.
The cup doesn't matter, right? Two defeats to Man City and one defeat Liverpool since the 23rd of December.
Yep.
Now, no matter what Rafa's done with this squad, which is spectacular, no doubt, I tell you what, the players are a lot better than maybe a lot of us think. They have to be, because no matter how good Rafa is, no matter how good of a job him and his coaching staff have done, those players have lost three games since the 23rd of December against the two best teams in the country. There are, you know.
Like last man, Norman.
We've now won.
Massive credit to Rafa, but massive credit to players. I think they're all just a bit better than probably what we all thought at the start of the season.
Some of us, Norman, predicted we'd get to 46 to 48 points in terms of me and you, so we're on course for that pre-season prediction, which was aired live. We're going to have to wrap it up here because Charlotte, Mick, you've got to go. So thanks to everybody for listening. What a fantastic day. Again, I'm bored of saying it. I'm not bored of saying it. What a fantastic day being a Newcastle United fan, to be from the North East. Such a shame that the other North East team are going into England's third tier. It's not a shame, is it? It's fantastic.
Nice.
what a contrast it is. And what a privilege to support this football club. What a club. And I want to, you know, thank everybody for listening. This podcast, the free podcast, will be back pretty much straight after the Everton game next week. We'll have the match day from Everton as well, from me and Ben, who are down there. And yeah, what a day to be a Newcastle United fan. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you soon.